people are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
Back in 2004, economists Carl Case and Robert Shiller published a paper entitled, Is There a Bubble in the Housing Market? Clearly not everyone missed the boat on what was to come. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, where today I'm pleased to be joined by Carl Case, well known as one of the economists who developed the Case-Shiller Index for housing prices. He's the Katherine Coman and A. Barton Heppern Professor of Economics at Wellesley College. Welcome, Carl.
Good to be here.
Clearly, there were many people who questioned those who assumed that housing prices were going to continue to go up and up. Did you ever anticipate that we'd be looking at foreclosure rates like this?
No, I didn't, to be honest with you. I mean, I believed there were going to be some problems, some serious problems, but I had no idea that this stuff had been so levered and that the house of cards would crumble the way it has.
So the combination of our thinking and the irrational availability of mortgages set a lot of people up for a housing crisis. What do you think would work at this point for a model or as a model for determining the amount that individuals should spend on a home?
Well, fortunately, we now have some data on what people can afford and can't afford in the presence of falling house prices. The difficulty with this last sequence of events and really the reason for the whole debacle was that we didn't have any data over the last 30 years in which house prices were falling. Obviously, the value of a mortgage and the likelihood that a mortgage will go into a default depends upon the value of the collateral against that mortgage. And we'd had 30 years nationally of rising house prices. We had some local downturns here in New England, in California, in Texas in the mid-80s. We had some regional downturns, but we basically had 30 years of rising house prices. And that gave great confidence to the analytical people at Fannie and Freddie and elsewhere in the system who looked at these mortgages in that period of rising house prices and discovered, lo and behold, that they could predict default rates with household characteristics and loan characteristics, but they forgot that in a period of rising house prices, all boats stay afloat. So it's the fact that we now have had this experience that will lead to better risk management, I hope.
You know, it's interesting. I live in Northern California in the San Francisco area, and I remember being told that prices will either go up or maintain. But
sure,
in the area in which you live, I was told, they will never go down. And,
right,
you know, I believed them.
People believed them.
How silly.
Well, you'd been through three cycles,
yep,
and every single time they went down for a while, they came roaring back. And if you've lived through three times when people say that prices could fall, it's like they're crying wolf.
So how do we look at what's happening today? Are prices now at a more reasonable level, would you say?
Well, they are, and house prices have moderated substantially, particularly at the low end. The big explosion this decade was in the lower third of the income distribution. If you look at the neighborhoods there where the subprime market fueled a lot of demand, in most cities, including San Francisco, Los Angeles, Florida, Arizona, and up here in New England, house prices at the low end tripled. They went from $150,000 to $450,000 to use an example. That was extraordinary. And it was that end that came crashing down when the jig was up, when we pushed prices too high. Now they're falling. They've fallen. In San Francisco, for example, the low end is down over 50%. The high end is down less than that. They've had fewer problems with fire sales and foreclosure sales.
No, but they're down by a third.
Oh, yeah. The state is down by a third. In some areas, they're not down by that much, but in a lot of areas, they're down by more than 50. And that's bringing buyers back in. That's clearly bringing buyers back in. But where it stops, nobody knows. And the real reason is we've got a big, nasty recession bearing down on us like a freight train.
So tell me about this notion of tying what a person earns to what they should be able to afford on a home?
Well, it's very difficult to do that. I mean, certainly there are upper limits. When you get to get up to 40 or 50%, it's just that you can't live with what's left of your income. But at whether it's 20, 25, 30, 35, depends on what people want to spend and what they're able to spend given their income. And when interest rates are low and house payments are therefore low, they can afford a lot of house. So it was the combination of the thought that prices would never fall, the availability of cheap credit, and in fact very low interest rates like we have now. Back in 2003, interest rates were down around 4.5%.
How long do you think it's going to take this market to normalize, if there even is such a thing?
Well, it's a tough word to define, and it's different in California than it is in New England than it is in the Midwest, where prices are below replacement costs. So I think it's going to take, there's some evidence that there's some positive things coming back in the housing market now, but I think to really resolve it's going to take the better part of a year at minimum.
What are your thoughts, Carl, about the Obama mortgage relief plan?
I think it's a good thing. I mean, they worked on it for a very long time. Sheila Bair sketched the bare bones of it, and then it was subject to a lot of review and a lot of discussion by the transition teams. And I think what came out of it is pretty reasonable. The part of it that was a problem initially was that you couldn't get these deals that needed to be done between buyers and between owners of property and the people who held the credit, because third parties and others were able to block the removal of the lien. They've come around that with these reasonable standards, this reasonable standards approach, holding servicers harmless. So I think what they've got now is a fairly workable package where the incentives are right. The question is, does it get through the backlog of mortgages in a reasonable amount of time? I think it certainly will help. It won't hurt.
What are your thoughts about areas where neighborhood after neighborhood has been abandoned? What kind of solutions might work to deal with the housing crisis in, say, a place like Cleveland?
Well, that's terrible. I mean, I think you've got to set up a task force where people can take those properties, tear them down, rehab them. Something has to be done collectively because there's a neighborhood effect. And I think mayors and governors and federal officials and HUD need to get into those neighborhoods. They're particularly bad in the four states that we call FACAZN, Florida, California, Nevada, and Arizona. When you put those four states together, they count for 54% of the auction sales. And it seems to me we ought to be sending a federal task force in there, in those four states anyway, and to just work these things out, work them out, get them sold. If people have to, if the property has to be foreclosed, by God, foreclose it, but don't let it drift into this mess of additional properties that are laying there vacant, where the copper's been stripped out, and it's a disaster. So I think they're focused enough, and the efforts of mayors, governors, and the Congress ought to be to get into those neighborhoods and make a plan.
As credit becomes more and more available, we hope, do you see this next period of time as being a good time for affordable housing development?
Well, sure.
Has to be, right?
sure is going to be better than it has been in the past decade or so. I mean, you've got a lot of properties that are vacant and in need of rehabilitation and development, and it's quite possible that this is a real boon. I mean, the upside and downside of a boom are benefit different people. In a boom period, the owners gain at the expense of people who don't own, but when prices fall, it provides an opportunity for affordable housing, the likes of which we haven't seen in decades.
So what would you say overall are the great lessons that we can learn from what just happened and what's happening right now?
Well, certainly the idea that markets solve all problems is a bygone notion. I mean, markets need to be regulated, they need to be watched, they need to be... Not that I think regulation would have really stopped this railroad train, but I think markets don't solve all problems. They need to be watched is the lesson number one. Lesson number two is that, you know, housing prices don't always go up. They come down, and you need to manage risk appropriately. And the third is the use of leverage. I mean, we had no idea that these things were going out to in banks who were sticking them in money market funds and structured investment vehicles and all kinds of derivatives, credit default swaps on the backs of the tranched markets of securities. Not that securitization by itself is bad, but the extent to which these things were on balance sheets that just weren't a potentially explosive, they were just potentially explosive.
Great. Well, thanks so much for your insights today. We hope that people learn lessons from all this, and I know there will be much analysis in the weeks, months, and years to come. Carl Chip Case, Catherine Coman, and A. Barton Hepburn, Professor of Economics at Wellesley College, thanks so much for being with us today on the Affordable Housing Podcast.
Pleasure talking to you, Joanne.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.